the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
So let's turn to the story which I think captured the imagination over the weekend, the disturbances on Grafton Street at the weekend and what it could mean for the future when the Gardaí are trying to enforce public health guidelines. We're joined by security analyst Declan Parr, but also by Stephen Breen, crime editor of the Irish Sun. But Stephen, before we even get to Grafton Street, just other examples of the difficulties that the Gardaí may be having at present. I saw reports over the weekend of house parties having to be broken up, and then an extraordinary event at a cemetery in Ratkeel in Limerick yesterday. What else, before we get to Grafton Street, is going on?
Yeah, well, I think since the start of the pandemic, Matt, the Gardaí have faced numerous challenges in terms of policing. During the pandemic, we have seen incidents of house parties taking place where the Gardaí have been somewhat frustrated in trying to police those parties, where they haven't had the power or the ability to go into these houses and talk to people and make arrests. They are frustrated somewhat. We've heard from the various associations in terms of the lack of guidance and the legislation coming from the government at the moment in terms of guards and what they can do to try and apprehend people who are perhaps holding house parties. But we've seen many incidents of protests in the past as well in Dublin and indeed in other parts of the country as well. We know that they've gone to different shebeens, for example, in rural parts of Ireland, trying to break those up too. So there are concerns out there among rank and file Gardaí. They are out there every day, you know, trying to police during this pandemic, and there's no question that it has forced major challenges for the Gardaí in the last year.
Can you tell us anything about yesterday in Ratkeel, where, according to some reports, 200 people had brought tables, chairs, food and refreshments to a cemetery?
Again, this is something that's not unusual. This has happened in other incidents in the last year where you do have people gathering for funerals especially, and other events as well. And I think it comes down to people ignoring the health and safety guidelines that are out there during the pandemic. So Gardaí were called to Ratkeel and had to talk to people there, people of influence, people who were part of the funeral cortege there, and try and educate and inform people that they were breaching the guidelines there, and then people had to be moved on. And also in the possibility that there are people who were at that event could now face prosecution with fines being issued.
Okay, now come back to Grafton Street on Saturday. How unexpected was the turn of events to the Gardaí?
Well, they were prepared for it in the sense that they did have intelligence that this protest was taking place. But I think that when you do have an event of this nature where you don't have one specific stakeholder, you don't have one specific entity, you know, who are engaging with the Gardaí prior to this year, you have social media and the power that it has, where you have people on social media issuing these rallying calls for people to turn up and protest. They, obviously, the Gardaí did have, like, 125 officers had been deployed. They had the mounted unit. They also had the dog unit. And they did have intelligence that the protest was taking place. But on this occasion, and I think the Gardaí will learn from this, that they did see that there were people present at that protest who were using the cover of the protest for one purpose only, and that was to attack the Gardaí. So I think when they look back at it, they will have to assess going forward, because we know that there are other protests that have been planned over the coming weeks. So how can they learn from that, and how can they improve the situation? And now it's about the investigation. The focus is on trying to apprehend those who engaged in serious violence on Saturday.
Declan Parr, security analyst. Listening to what Stephen has explained there, it strikes me almost like a comparison with football hooligans in generations past who might have used the excuse of an event to go and create a ruck. Is this what perhaps is happening here, that there may be well-meaning people who do want to protest about things in lockdown, and then they find themselves being manipulated by others who are actually just really trying to cause violence?
Well, to be honest, I don't think there's too many well-meaning people involved in this, because if, you know, a well-meaning person would suggest a degree of responsibility. And while there are people, I'm sure, that have varying opinions about how efficient lockdown is, or whether it's an appropriate response, or a whole spectrum of opinion about that, I think most people throughout the country that I've come in contact with realise we're in a crisis situation. And, you know, we have to deal with it as best we can. And that attempting to sabotage the state's ability to go about its day-to-day business and to attack members of the police force is a suitable way to do that. you know, or to even just to engage in a protest that puts people at unnecessary risk is highly irresponsible, and it suggests a level of disconnect from reality. So with that, you know, it's quite different to other types of protest. Like if we just used as a yardstick maybe the water protests from years gone by, again, regardless of what one's opinions were about it, you could argue that there was a certain political legitimacy to people having a difference of opinion and wanting to engage in a protest. Some of those protests were well orchestrated and conducted, and some were not and developed into violence. In this case, I can't see any of these types of manifestations developing into other than violence and chaos, because that seems to be the primary objective. And if you think about it, there's a little bit of form to go by. Over the course of the last year, we saw manifestations of people outside courthouses in the city centre in Dublin, and there was an ugliness and a nastiness and something that verged on the fascist, reminiscent of the Germany in the 30s, you know, harassing people that were wearing masks as they went about their business, things of that nature. We need now to get out in front of this. I think the Gardaí are well capable in terms of their intelligence gathering and their public order deployment to deal with this, but I think we need to see a slightly more effective projection of force if there is to be another manifestation of this.
So that what do you Gardaí mean by that? Put
it up. What I mean by that is that the Gardaí approached it from a very human point of view, the policing of last Saturday's demonstration. They started off with ordinary uniformed clad Gardaí, the human face of policing, if you like. And as the violence escalated, they interspersed them with the public order Gardaí, but in a slightly more informal way. I would be more inclined the next time around for one of these demonstrations is that the primary Garda face would be public order clad, including helmets and shields, if for no other reason than to protect the Gardaí there from getting unnecessarily infected with COVID-19, as well as protecting them physically. But also, it protects the rioters because it prevents them from being able to engage in the level of violent activity. It allows them to be kettled, to use a phrase from public order policing, and manoeuvred, shepherded, if you like, along from A to B with the minimum of violence.
But can anything be done, sorry Declan, to stop them gathering in the first place? And
yes.
If we are all supposed to be maintaining social distance, is it, and given that if you look at videos of events that have gone on over the last year, there's a few of the same faces keep turning up, well-known agitators. Is it legal, for example, if these people are known to be agitators, to maybe detain them on a day when something is planned?
Well, absolutely, Matt. And to go back to your first point, yes, the Gardaí have done this very effectively in dealing with public order disturbances and antisocial activity in the past, which is you can disrupt the lines of movement, the lines of ingress to a location. With effective intelligence gathering, you know where the crowd are going to coalesce. You can interrupt that process. And what you can, you still want to allow, we're a democracy, people are allowed to voice their protest. But we are in the midst of a crisis that equates to an extent with a wartime type crisis that requires us to perhaps have to structure or limit the facility for protest. And what I'm saying in plain English here is that the Gardaí would be legally and operationally effective if they were to prevent the coalition of a large number, allow people to voice their protest in smaller numbers that are heavily policed and that it can't get out of hand. Then to come back to your other point, where there are the legal tools to be able to bring people before the courts where there appears to be evidence of them instigating acts of violence or instigating points of confrontation with the Gardaí, let's do that. I think part of the problem heretofore has been because of a government policy of being too soft and engaging in what in defence terms is known as provocative weakness. We thought that that would work in the early stages, that you'd bring along the mass of people in the country, and we did. But we have a situation now whereby I think a minority, but a minority that's intent on being disruptive and violent, oftentimes for very incoherent reasons, need to be dealt with appropriately. And the rest of the citizenry of the state need to see that their state apparatus is responding on their behalf. Because this is about the human rights of the vast majority who are law-abiding and who want to see this pandemic ended as efficiently and as soon as possible. And these kinds of activities are not contributing to that. They're interfering with that. So I think the state has a right and a duty to the vast majority of people that it's responsible for their security and welfare to act appropriately, swiftly and competently against these people.
Stephen Breen, crime editor of the Irish Sun. Some of the people involved in these protests are of the type who sometimes hijack the tricolour as well, particularly in their social media activity, which has given rise to concerns about attempted disruption on St. Patrick's Day. What's known of that?
Well, that's the concern that the guards have at the moment, is that those who would engage in this type of activity, those who were present in Grafton Street at the weekend, might use or might have used Grafton Street and the events which took place there, use those as a template for further disruption on St. Patrick's Day. You know, it's a day when we're all out celebrating, you know, St. Patrick's Day. But on this occasion, we're in a pandemic, but that still won't stop those people. And many of those people who were there on Saturday are COVID deniers. I mean, they think COVID is a myth. So they don't care about their own health. They don't care about the health of the citizens of Dublin or indeed across Ireland. So I think for them to go about their business in terms of protesting St. Patrick's Day is perhaps a call to arms for some of these people. We see some of their posts on social media and how they see themselves as patriots, but there's nothing patriotic about firing fireworks in the faces of Gardaí. And, you know, you have a community policing officer who suffered a broken ankle and a perforated eardrum, who's now out of work for a number of months, and he was someone who was delivering supplies to vulnerable people in Pear Street. So that's the true nature of what these people are involved in.
Indeed. Where are we at when it comes to prosecutions in relation to Saturday's events?
Well, 23 people have already been charged in relation to the events from the weekend and on a variety of offences. The investigation is very much active. It's being run through an incident room, Matt, at Pear Street Garda Station. I understand searches were taking place today. As part of the investigation, they will be trawling through CCTV footage. I think a priority for the investigation team will be to identify and arrest the individual who's accused of using the fireworks at frontline Gardaí, but also others who engaged in throwing missiles, others who broke COVID-19 guidelines, for example, travelling beyond the 5 kilometre rule just to attend the protest. So it's a big investigation. An SAO has been appointed to look at it. You have also a debriefings taking place, Gardaí having meetings today to discuss their next tactic, but I imagine they will also learn from it of what happened on Saturday in terms of going forward.
And Declan Power, just to finish with you, is there another dimension here that is going to create difficulties, in that some of these people may have been to a degree radicalised, to sort of QAnon types, that we're not immune to it in Ireland, that stupidity is a virus that can come across the Atlantic as well?
Very well put, Matt. I agree. I think we need to keep it in perspective. I don't think the wheels are going to come off Irish democracy because of this. But I do think it's a warning light that has come on our collective societal dashboard. You know, at a time when we need to be pulling together, we have discovered that there is a minority, maybe perhaps a significant minority, that are so dislocated from their own communities that they would engage in these kinds of activities. So how we go forward in this is not something that we load onto the shoulders of our Gardaí, the response for this. This is something that we all have to take a bit of personal responsibility. How many of us now in our societal groups have we come across people who get very vociferous in denying the straightforward medical science that has been put in front of us? You know, I've come across people myself who I would have thought would have known better given their age and their level of education. We need now to not to engage in confrontation, but to, you know, politely draw a line and say, you know, I'm not going to tolerate this kind of nonsense. No more than if we were being asked in the 1930s and people were expressing totalitarian opinions and expecting them to be accepted in decent society, that we wouldn't stop it. We wouldn't accept racist nonsense at the dinner table. We wouldn't accept sexist nonsense, or we don't accept sexist nonsense anymore in decent society. So we should now start to discern between legitimate dissent and complete nonsensical, Luddite, flat earth thinking, and expecting that to be given the same space as other thinking. I think it starts within the media too. I don't know how many of your listeners might agree with this point, but I certainly was starting to get a you know, a short patience span with various business people and certain politicians coming on air and making pronouncements like they had medical degrees that they're behind. Argue the points that you know how to argue. Accept that there are limitations to your knowledge. Listen to the people who know what they're talking about. Give appropriate space. And perhaps we will find our way out of this difficult period that we're in. I think we're turning the corner on the worst of this at the moment, from what I can gather, listen to people more knowledgeable about it, if we listen to some of the commentary. So we need to keep our heads. An overreaction is as bad as an underreaction. But the Gardaí are not the ones who can solve this problem. Our policymakers, our body politic, need to get out in front of this. And community organisations need to be thinking about this too. And finally, what I would say is we need to be thinking more about developing online media literacy education for our young people so that they can think their way through the morass of nonsense and bad thinking that's out there in the online world.
Declan Power and Stephen Breen, crime editor of the Irish Sun, thank you both for being with us here on The Last Word at Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.